Hello, everyone. I'm Andy O'Donnell. I'm a technical product manager on the Office 365 team, and we'll get started here in just a second. We're going to be doing the overview of Office 365. So if you were expecting a session that was going to be all about SharePoint, you're in the wrong room. We'll actually talk about some of the other products as well. So just want to make sure you're aware of that. We'll let some few stragglers get in, and then we'll get started. So thank you all for coming today. It's just a fancy title, you know. We like to make it sound more, you know, more fancy than it is, right? Put technical in front of it. No, it means that we work closer with the engineering orgs versus product managers that focus more just on some of the sales channels and outbound messaging. So that's the difference between the two. The technical ones work closer with engineering to make sure they understand what features and capabilities are coming into the product. All right, looks like the trickle is slowing down, so we'll go ahead and get started. Like I said, overview for Office 365. This is a 200-level session, so we're just going to be going quickly over a lot of different areas and aspects of Office 365, covering some of the end-user aspects of it, and talking a little bit about the administration and setup as well. But again, it's going to be an overview covering all of the different workloads, talking about what's new in the upcoming release for the service. So for our agenda for today, we're going to be looking at basically what Office 365 is. It's now been in market for almost a year and a half, but there's still lots of confusion about how it fits in with some of our other products and servers and services. So just want to make sure everyone has a good, solid foundation there before we jump into what's new in this version and talk about some of the investments that are being made across the latest wave of updates for Office 365 and all of the products and servers as well. Then spend a lot of time in the demo just showing some of the end-user functionality of Office, of how it interacts with Office 365, and what's new in some of the 2013 capabilities. Then we'll jump into kind of the second half of the presentation, which will be a little bit talking about what it means to when you have a service hosted by Microsoft. What do we do around compliance, security, and trust to make sure that your data is protected? And take a quick look at some of the other options that IT has to consider, such as your identity and support and hosting, and maybe hybrid considerations as well, and briefly touch on those points. And lastly, I'll have a quick brief slide, keep marketing slides, the minimum of that just talks about the different flavors of 365 that are available to organizations, because we've really made 365 available for just the single individual consultant who runs their own business all the way up to large governments with potentially millions of users, and how we make a service that we can target for all of these different types of users. So with that, we'll go ahead and jump into sort of our Microsoft's productivity vision and how we see that evolving. Basically, if you've been at any of our conferences for the last 3 years, you've probably seen a version of this slide. It's because our productivity vision really hasn't changed from a very high level over the last few years. We've kept very steady on our investments, really starting in 2010, some of the investments we made here, particularly some of the first versions of like the web apps that we shipped in the last release, which have been updated in the new version. And so making sure that we have the best experience across different devices and some of the investments we've made there, including there were the new version of Office for Mac in 2011, for example. And then you'll see some of the other experiences that we've tried to bring in the new 365 suite in particular, and I'll demo that in a little bit. The other area is we really want to make sure customers have the ability to provide productivity services to their end users in the way that best fits their organization's needs. So that means cloud on your terms, being able to decide if you want to keep running your servers and services on-prem, if you want to do a hybrid configuration where maybe you move just one workload, such as your email, to the cloud, or if you want to move wholesale and move all of your services to the Microsoft's hosted cloud and let us run it for you. Basically, we give you a lot of flexibility and options there. And so that's continued to be an area of investment. You know, we started on that journey with 2010, and we continued with the 2013 to make those scenarios even more easy for organizations to set up and configure. And then at the bottom here, these are some of the core workloads that we see around in productivity. And you know from, you know, obviously some of the announcements that were made earlier, just how we continue to invest in all of these core areas for us, in messaging, video and voice, things like the Skype acquisition there, content management, of course, bread and butter for SharePoint, and then some of the other, you know, social and data and analytics and the improvements we've made there. So we'll touch on all those, but just pointing out that, you know, the vision has really has maintained the same. We continue to look at productivity holistically. And the Office 365 is really a service where we're actually able to now give all of these components to a customer at once, instead of having to think, oh, an IT shop might use just one aspect of our core servers here. They might take just the messaging and then interrupt it. We don't necessarily control the experience end to end. But with Office 365, we're able to deliver all of these different aspects and provide them in a controlled way. And that has a few benefits that I'll talk about later. So what was new in this release of the 2013 bits, which, you know, as you know, recently RTM'd? So what were some of the core areas of investments for engineering as they started thinking about, you know, this was about a little less than 3 years ago, right? After 2010 had RTM'd and shipped that, before 365 was launched. This is where engineering was starting to think about, okay, what are the areas that we need to be investing in to make sure that we have a great set of products, you know, 3 years from now or here towards the end of 2012. And so these were really the four areas that they decided to make sure that they were investing new features, functionality, into the products and services for you to experience. And so obviously first we were around devices, talked about that in the last slide, and I'll show in the demo, but mainly making sure that we thought about touch. Touch was really taking off at the end of 2010, particularly as more tablets and smartphones were becoming mainstream consumerization of IT, and so making sure we had great experiences there. Of course, there was also work going on in the Windows world. It wasn't as publicly known at that point in time, but obviously internally there was work. How do we make sure we can take advantage of some of the new capabilities that are going to come with the next version of Windows? And then making sure that the service has great support for mobile devices. And also with Windows Phone, there was of course the Office Hub in Windows Phone 7 and 7.5, and that's been enhanced in Windows Phone 8. And then also support for things like Exchange Active Sync across other iOS and Android devices, and making sure that we have compatibility with those for some of those experiences, as well as web apps and good viewing experiences in the browser on those devices. Next area is really our cloud investments. So that is really where we wanted to make sure we had we made sure that the servers and services would scale and run in a scalable service. So if you need to virtualize them, if you need to be able to make sure you're running massive amounts of data centers, we could do that. So lots of investments under the hood in our server software to make sure it runs better in the service. Also, there's the new application model that allows you to bring other external services into the service, basically through almost an iframe browser, if you will, and allows you to unlock some of that data that's inside your documents, inside email, and have it interact with your other systems. And so the new app model, of course, is very exciting. There's a session going on right now that's an overview of it that you could watch later on demand. There's going to be a lot more about that here at this session. And then the last thing is Office for the cloud. And this is where we started looking at how can we make sure that Office can be delivered in a more cloud-like fashion. Yes, you could get Office with 365 when it first launched, but the only difference was really that it activated against the cloud. But otherwise, it was still a very traditional piece of software. And so we've made a lot of investments in how to make sure we could deliver Office in a more on-demand fashion to computers as a cloud service. Another investment area, of course, was our social. In social, we have some of the investments we made. Obviously, there was extending those with Yammer, but also just in SharePoint, some of the news feed capabilities, which I'll show you in the demo in a minute. And then also having more presence and contact, a unified contact experience, so that you're able to always know who people are in your organization very quickly, and have that be common and integrated throughout the suite. So no matter which product you're using, having users have it be the exact same experience. And then finally, just enhancing our meeting experiences with better multi-party video and HD video and making those more interactive. And you've also seen acquisitions to enhance that experience as well, such as the PPI acquisition and some of the interactive touch screens that we have there that are going to be integrated into the suite. And then the last bucket that developers were really thinking about was really around our control. How do we make sure that IT organizations can take advantage of all these great end-user pieces of functionality and at the same time have the control and levers that they need to be compliant, to meet regulations, and to make sure that things are running smoothly in their organization? And so There was a lot of investments around data loss prevention, e-discovery, things to help organizations with compliance, and also new ways to control things like the add-ons and the app model for the Office client itself, as well as some additional telemetry options so you know what kind of add-ons are being used in your organization and helping you troubleshoot that integration with Office, as well as some of the control and aspects that were put into the 365 portal itself to help organizations that are maybe doing a hybrid or maybe they're transitioning from an on-prem to the cloud so that there's a nice familiar transition. So things like the Exchange Administration Console are now the same between on-prem and online so that as an IT admin, you can move between those environments and have it be and feel exactly the same. In fact, in a hybrid setup, you can actually control both from one interface, both your on-prem users and your cloud users. So there's been a lot of integration and control from that angle and investments there across the suite. So when we think about what Office 365 is, it's really a bundling of individual server products hosted inside of Microsoft's cloud. Now, the traditional three that people always think of are Exchange Online, SharePoint Online, and Link Online. These are the core productivity servers that we had. These were the ones that we really launched and led with when Office 365 came out about 18 months ago. And these are the main ones people think of. Again, things like the 25 gigabyte mailbox, ability to have an archive. You get SharePoint Online. Now, of course, with the update, you'll get SkyDrive Pro for all of the users, for example. And some of the additions there, Link Online, for example, has added the ability to connect it to PSTN systems, so you can call landlines, et cetera. But what's really kind of new in the latest release is these three workloads down below. I call out Office 365 Pro Plus in particular. Yes, we had a version of Office before, but this is Office 365 Pro Plus is the new version of Office that comes in some of the the bundles of Office 365, where it's actually streamed down to the user and then installed and cached on the machine through our new click-to-run technology. And there's also the ability to have Office on demand. It gives you the ability to have Office on more than one device, and Office roams with you. And I'll talk a little bit about that in the demo as well, how that works. Another workload that we're really excited to have to bring into the Office 365 family is Project Online. This is a really exciting set of capabilities and features. I highly recommend you go to some Project Online sessions while you're here this week. I've been really, really blown away by the usefulness and the utility of how it's been integrated into SharePoint, and I see a lot of organizations being able to now add that, for segments of their users that find that set of power tools really useful. And then, of course, there's Visio has also adopted a similar model like Office 365 Pro Plus for allowing you to get Visio quickly onto different machines and have it follow you as you roam between your devices. And so there's now Visio in Office 365 as well. So we've really brought the whole set of productivity servers and products into Office 365 with this release and really made it so that it's unified and you can get all of those delivered to you as a service. So what are some of the benefits of going with Office 365 versus running it yourself? The first one, again, is the Office applications in Office 365 Pro Plus. It's the only way to get the five devices per user licensing through the subscription service. So that means that you can install Office on up to five different PCs or Macs per user with this new Office and how it connects to Office 365. And of course, it's available offline. So that's one of the main benefits you get there. That also means that we can push out updates much faster to the client versions, and those can be streamed down seamlessly in the background. Another benefit, of course, is that you get all of your core server workloads without having, and you get all the customizability and advanced IT controls without having to manage some of the on-prem things you would normally have to think about, like capacity planning or getting new hardware to run the servers. Another area there is we can push out updates faster in a cycle of continuous innovation. And so that means that we can ship updates faster to the service because we know exactly what versions are running in our service versus when customers might have a more heterogeneous environment in their data center. And so we're able to push out updates faster. And for example, things like being able to have previews of documents inside of the Outlook web app was a feature that was shipped first to the service and then later shipped to the servers. Another benefit with Office 365 is that you get a scalable service. So if you need to onboard a bunch of new users, you can do that very, very quickly. You don't have to, again, there isn't a long lag between doing that. And you get a 99.9% SLA. So that's the guaranteed uptime for the availability of the service that we provide and is financially backed. And then the last area is really around, as a trusted service, all of the security, privacy, and transparency aspects of what we put into making sure that you will be able to meet your compliance and regulatory needs, all of it being provided through us and giving you a very secure environment. And I'll talk more about security after the demo. So with that, let's jump over and take a look at the service. Okay, so we're going to start off inside of Outlook, where I'm sure many of you start your day. So this is the new Outlook 2013, and you can see sort of how we've changed and updated the UI to give it a more clean and flat look to it, very, very much in the Windows 8 styling. And you can see here we're connected as the user KDJ. That'll be sort of my persona as I move between some of these different experiences here. I'll be mostly using KDJ to move between it. You can see here we've got our traditional inbox, we've got an archive, and we've also got a Northwind Traders site, which I'll talk about in a little bit. So here you can see, as I hover over the messages, one of the design principles was to try and create just-in-time information to the user. So notice when I pull away from certain areas, the certain options disappear. This is to not overload the end user with too much information until they're hovering over the mail that they want. So then I can easily delete the mail right from with a click without having to move anywhere else. But again, we hide those UI elements from the user until they're just about to take an action. So we call that, you know, just-in-time UI to help them make decisions about it. Now, we can move through different areas here. We can look at some of our different emails. And earlier I mentioned one of the new pieces of functionality is the new cloud app model. So here inside of an email, you can see that we actually have some suggested applications that are actually scanning the email, and they're seeing that, oh, there's certain text in here that triggers that application. And so in this case, notice it's highlighted the date and time, and it's highlighted the location, and it sees who's on the email thread, and it notices, hey, we think there's a meeting that you'd like to schedule here. And it's automatically suggesting the time based on what's in it and allows us to schedule that with the location. Another thing are there's action items. If you want to make sure that you're replying to the emails you need to follow up with. And another one is we can go into, for example, take a look at our user. We take a look at this particular one here. I want to show some if I want to reply to an email in line. We've made it so it's quicker now to actually just hit reply and not open up a separate window that distracts from the user, but just lets you reply to the message right from within. The reading pane, preview pane here. Now, I want to go ahead and I'm going to attach a file to this email. So this is just going to, we're just going to attach, this is, you know, talking about some of our marketing spend. And I have some information that I want to include in the reply. And you can see I've added this attachment. But notice what's happened as I added this attachment is that I got a policy tip here. Saying that this what I tried to attach, it's highlighting the Excel sheet, contains sensitive information. So as I mentioned earlier in the controls section, we've added something called data loss prevention, and I'm showing you how it appears to the end user when it applies to them. So what's happened is that there is a policy that the exchange administrator has set up, and that policy has detected that there is information that should not be shared, you know, under certain rules within my organization. In this case, it's noticed that there's credit card information inside of that Excel document. And that's why it's flagging it as, hey, you shouldn't be sending this email. This is against your corporate policy. This is very handy for users because how many people know all of the policies within their organizations and how they apply to, you know, maybe the differences between sending an email to someone internal versus someone external. And this gives IT the ability to create these policies that inside of Exchange and apply certain rules and if-then configurations so that, for example, there are different behaviors if it was going, say, internally versus externally. Now, you can see here in this particular example, I do have the option to override it. And that might be something as you're testing policies, or there's policies that are less enforced than others, less severe. You can give certain options, or you could make it so the user can never override it, for example. The other thing is that you could also start audit trails. So your action will be audited here. You see, I chose to override and send the email anyways. But then it's going to let someone in IT know, and there'll be a proper follow-up or as needed, and it can be decided, you know, based on the business situation if that was appropriate or not. So I'm going to go ahead and discard that email and not send that. I'm going to go back over to this email where I have an attachment in the email. And one interesting thing in the new Outlook is we've integrated a feature of SharePoint called Site Mailboxes. That's what this Northwind Traders is. Northwind Traders is actually a SharePoint site that my team is collaborating inside of to get work done. And you notice here we have a documents section where we've actually got all of the documents that are inside that SharePoint library. So now this is another way for people to access their documents from within Outlook without having to leave their workflow and go somewhere external to how the way that they were working. So this will be really useful for users as they think about, you know, not always sending attachments anymore, but how can they actually get more familiar in using things like SkyDrive and SharePoint for sharing documents. So if we go back to that email, obviously, because it's integrated right into our Outlook, that makes it easy to do things like drag and drop the file into our documents, and hopefully that'll maybe sync up there, and we can actually see that. Yes, we'll see if it syncs up, but basically it will sync up to that SharePoint site and then allow other users to collaborate on it. It also makes it easier then to share that document and work with other people on it. Now, we'll see here that's gonna keep going, but we'll jump over to Word now. Okay, there we go, it opened up. So now it's actually loading it down from the SharePoint site itself. It's not stored. Just because the view in Outlook has it doesn't mean it's actually stored on the computer. It is still stored inside of SharePoint. It's just surfacing those to the users through that view. So we're going to go ahead and let Word download the document and connect to it. Great. So here we're going to go ahead and start editing it. And now there's some nice features inside of the new Word that I want to call out as well. One of those is here I've got this document. Notice that I've got Katie signed into Word right up at the top, so it knows who you are and follows you. Now Katie's chosen this theme. There's different themes that can be chosen. If we go into the backstage, here you can see the new backstage view that's been updated. But if you go into the account section, you can actually see, oh yeah, I'm logged in as Katie. You can actually have multiple accounts here. So this is important for users who maybe have a Microsoft account, their Live ID, and then they also have their work account. And they could have both of those connected to Office, and they could switch between them and say be accessing their documents that are in their public SkyDrive. And then they could also be accessing documents and then they could switch back to their work account and only be accessing the documents in their work. Of course, IT organizations have the ability to turn this off. There's group policies, so you can turn that off and not allow their users to have any access to public cloud services such as Microsoft SkyDrive. But the option is there for people, or if they're maybe working on a home computer, for example. Other things like the theme and the different backgrounds that I showed, I'll change it to stars here. Those also then follow you around as you install it on different devices or as you move between different applications. This is also where you can connect to other services, such as if you want to connect to a 365 SharePoint or to another SkyDrive account. Also get to the Office store from there. Now I've got this document that I want to do some edits to, and I remember that there was some data inside of a PDF that I wanted to take a look at. So I'm going to go ahead and open up that PDF. And there was a nice table here with the information that I needed for this meeting. So I'm going to go ahead and copy and paste that into this document. So let's just go ahead and insert that table. I didn't quite insert the way I wanted it to. Luckily, there's a new feature in Word that lets us open PDFs with Word itself, and then makes it easier to take that information and extract it from documents. So as you noticed, I just went and said, open that PDF inside of Word. And so now this is that same PDF that you saw inside of Adobe Reader. But now it's been formatted correctly inside of Word, so I can actually take that information, copy it, and then go ahead and paste that into my document. I'm going to get rid of the old version. And it actually keeps the formatting from the PDF viewers, from the PDF. So this is a nice way. Yeah, this is very handy. You can see a lot of use for this. And from here, of course, we can then save it as, we can, of course, save as a PDF back if we need to convert it back into that format. But this is going to be a lot of use, save people a lot of time when they just want to take some information from a document and collaborate with it. So we're going to go ahead. I won't actually save those changes. No, not right now. But very, very useful piece of functionality. Another interesting feature here is the ability to insert more content sources. So as the advent of more digital sources has become increasingly popular, people want to put that interactive content into their documents. So we actually have the ability to insert online pictures and online video. And notice you can have different engines that you search from. You could also connect it to on-prem SharePoint file image store if you have one of those in your organization. So you can choose and customize what services your users are allowed to pull photos from, for example. But I just wanted to find one of an old phone. So we'll go ahead and see if we can pull up an old phone image. Good, this one looks good. Let's just go ahead and insert that. That's perfect, great. And right now, again, just that just-in-time UI that I showed you inside of Outlook, notice another one that's popped up here inside of Word. And so now there's some more options for our image wrapping. And we provide better, I'm going to change it to a nice tight text wrap, and we provide better real-time actual updating. You can see how quickly it reflows the document as I move the image around. And you can also see these green grid lines for improved presentation and orientation of different objects inside of your documents. And there's more of those throughout some of the other applications as well. So we'll go ahead and we'll close this one. We don't want to save the changes to that PDF. And we'll close out of that. So now going back to Outlook. Another thing, of course, this is Outlook Rich Client, but I also wanted to show you the Outlook web app, which has a very similar look and feel, but there's some interesting differences too. So we'll just jump over to the Outlook web app. So now we're inside the browser. This is in Internet Explorer 10 right now. But again, we support all of the major browsers, Firefox, Chrome, Safari. You notice I have some of those open down below. Again, always making sure that we have great support so that no matter what browser device someone is on, they're able to access their content. And so here you can see some of those same emails. Notice that I have the ability to do a preview from right within OWA. This, again, I mentioned this earlier, was a feature that we shipped first into the service, and then it was later backported onto our on-prem code. But that's an example of such functionality. Also, you can see different drafts there. And you can also see that some of those applications, such as the action items and the Bing Maps and suggested meetings, also work inside of the web app. So again, the nice thing about this app model is that it works whether you have the rich clients or if you're using the web apps. And so that allows you to have a consistent experience and make sure that people are always able to access their different applications. So you can see there, and again, these can be interactive because it's basically an iframe. So this can be any service that your organization might have built. It can also be services that only are running on-prem, and you're only allowing people to connect to it when they're on your corporate network. You don't actually have to host the service in a cloud. It just means that if someone was then outside of your network and trying to access it, it would just basically show like a 404, a do not load, for the service because it wouldn't be able to hit the URL. But again, there's lots of IT customization configuration for how these built-in these new apps can work inside of the Office client. You can see we've got the archive that we also had in Outlook. We've got our tasks down here. And then notice across the top we have the new navigation bar for Office 365. This really helps users see all of their different services that they have access to. So we've got their mailbox, their calendar, the people that they're connected with, newsfeed, of course, and SkyDrive and Sites, some of the SharePoint functionality, and then the store in office.com. You also see here their link presence and integration with their photo and their contacts, so they can start and see and change their status right from within here. Another interesting one I wanted to show you is I've mentioned some of our optimization for mobile devices. So I'm going to go ahead and just open up the tablet version of OWA so you can see how the Outlook web app changes when we look at it for a tablet. So here, now you can imagine this is on a, pretend that this is on a tablet device. You can see how we've changed the layout a little bit to provide easier buttons for your fingers right from within the browser. So now you can quickly, you could search through your email, you can do a refresh. You can also see here, you can start new mail, go into more just of a reading mode. But basically, and then of course you have a nice big sort of Windows 8 style button for choosing some of the different options, go into calendar mode, again, all still within this tablet version of it. Here you can see this. You can imagine that this would be very touch-friendly with the ability to swipe between these different dates and examine the calendar with nice fluid animations. And we really focused a lot on animations in the Office 2013 as a way to help navigate the user, to help them understand the flow between the different areas as they're moving between their calendar or their tasks or their email. And there's also lots of animations in the other products as well. I'll show some of those in Excel later. But basically, you get a very nice tablet interface here. And then I'll show you the phone interface. And we'll have to shrink down the browser window here while that loads so you can actually see sort of the difference of how it would look on a phone. There you go. So now you can see this is sort of optimized for a phone browser. You can see, again, same inbox. You're able to just flick and scroll between those different emails. You have the same sort of ability to switch between your calendar, mail, contacts. You can move email to different folders, search, start a new email, and move between it. And then when you click to open up an email, you can see how it just changes. It changes the whole screen, so you can easily read that and then go back to your inbox again, all very nice and fluid. So you can see how this is very much optimized for a mobile phone experience. So there have been a lot of improvements to OWA there. I think those will be pretty useful for your users as they're accessing their email from different devices. So we'll go ahead and span that back out and close that one. So now we're done kind of with OWA. We'll go over to take a look at SharePoint and some of the SharePoint functionality that we've got in the Office 365 service. Here you can see I've gone to the sites section of Katie Jordan, and these are all of the different sites that she's following. So we've got some different sales, marketing, accounting. We're going to go over to the Northwind Traders. So here we've got the Northwind Traders site. You can see here we've got a getting started with your site that's part of the new SharePoint. Helps people more quickly add some of the more common apps to SharePoint sites that are used. Things like the new project summary taskbar. This is a new piece of functionality that's related to Project Online, bringing in the timeline view. So here you can see the different tasks that have been assigned to people related to this project and understand when they're due, for example. It's also very interesting because someone could have multiple projects in different sites, and then there's a way to actually aggregate all of those tasks into the ones that are for that person. So you could add a task, you can edit the list. If we wanted to take a look at what are all the different tasks that are on the, that are part of this project, for example. You can also see we have news feed for the site, as well as the document store. And this document store is the same one that you saw inside of Outlook earlier. So again, now we're just going full circle from how we were interacting with those documents when they were inside of Outlook, and now we're inside the SharePoint site, again, being able to work with those same documents. So we've loaded up that timeline view. You can see here it's very easy to then quickly create subtasks, remove these. You can see when their due dates, who they're assigned to, for example. And it's easy to edit these, change the list, add new tasks if you want, and put those on the list. But this is a very, very useful piece of functionality for the new SharePoint. And then if I go and show you just how that integrates with our person's main task, as tasks get assigned to you from these different sites, you can then, of course, view all of your tasks by going to your profile page, clicking on tasks, and then actually see all of the ones that have been assigned to you, and they show up here. So it's a very useful way to kind of consolidate the different ones that you have from your different projects. So that timeline view has really been integrated. And here you can see the one new task, and that's the one from the Northwind site that we were just on. So we'll go back to that site. We'll scroll down over to, let's go to our documents. You can also see the mailbox there. That was the site mailbox that, again, was in Outlook. So we'll go back over to our documents. And here you can see the new library view, document library view, things like being able to do ratings, when documents were modified by. You can hover over those. I love the new little preview window for each file. You can just click on this and quickly get a preview where it's actually a little Office web app that's been iframed inside of this preview window, letting you know what's inside the document. So again, it's just an even faster way to see, oh, is this the document I'm looking for? Yes, no. You can scroll through some slides, but it's still powered by the web app, so you get the full rich fidelity that you would get even if it was, you know, a full size window. You can quickly see who it's shared with, or you can share with other people. Very easily. You can follow documents, so if you want to make sure that you get updates and notified on your newsfeed when the document's been changed or updated, that's very easy to do. So now you get a little notification. Great, I'm now following this document. It's one I care a lot about. And then my personal favorite is the quick link to that file, so it makes it easy if I need to, you know, send out a mass email or post or anything. I'm always having an easy access to the URL for the document. Which was a little bit tricky to get to sometimes in the 2010 version. So that's much easier. Now I'm going to go ahead and edit this, and I'm going to go ahead and let it and download it. So it's going to download to Excel and open that. So here we can see it's downloading the document. I'm just going to cancel the download since I've got it cached here on the machine. And then we're going to do some analysis here, getting ready for our meeting with this document. So we're inside the new Excel here. We can see that we've got some data that's not quite as clean as we want it to be to do our analysis. So one of the things I want to do then is go ahead and extract out who the representative is for all of these different marketing expenses. So I'm going to see I've got the names here kind of blurred together with some other information. So I'm going to say, okay, that was John, this one was Jenny. And this is the new flash fill feature where it sees, oh, I see a pattern of the type of data you're trying to extract. So I can just hit enter, and then it pulls out all of the names of all of the different people that are inside of that data. And it's smart enough to be able to pull all of the different type, and it can also concatenate if you wanted to combine different ones. So we'll do events here, or we could do EVS-events, and make sure I get that right. And then let's see, we want to do ads. And again, it can continue to extract the different types of data and get it exactly the way we want. Very easily. So this is a really handy way for people to take messed up data and turn it into something useful. Now, continuing on that theme of just-in-time information, we've got a new tool that popped up when I selected the data in this table. Now that I've got it cleaned up in the way that I want it, I want to actually do some, you know, create a chart or maybe do some analysis of it. And so we've got a new quick analysis lens that lets us preview our data and see different ways of presenting it. So it recommends, okay, I could look at data bars for it. That's not quite as useful as what I was looking for. There's tables, there's spark lines. If you're familiar with the spark lines, you can see those. Those were introduced in 2010. And I really like how this feature gives me the actual data. It gives me a preview with my actual data live. So here you can see a clustered column. So this is what I was looking for, where I could see how are the different spending by category. I wasn't so interested in the person, but what was our total spend in all of these different areas. So I can go ahead and select that I want that one. And then it's automatically creating a pivot table and a pivot chart. So the person doesn't even need to know what a pivot chart or pivot table are. It automatically creates that for them in the view that they want. So again, another time-saving feature that helps people better analyze and manipulate their data. So it's inserted that right here into this. So that's pretty useful. Now, there was a couple other things I wanted to do in this spreadsheet. Let's go over and take a look at a new Power tool. And there's some other sessions on this. This is Power View and Power Pivot. And this is a new capability. Power Pivot was first introduced in 2010 as an add-on. It's now been integrated even more heavily into Excel 2013. And Power View is a new dashboard that allows us to analyze data in more interactive ways. So if we go and take a look here, first I just want to show you that there the data on the back end. So here's the Power Pivot. One of the nice things about Power Pivot is it allows large stores of data to be accessed and manipulated in memory inside of Excel, and it can handle huge data sets all inside of it. So you can see here, this is a database with a bunch of different tables. So you can just see these are all of the different tables that are going into creating that BI dashboard that we have behind the scenes. So this could, of course, be connected to whatever sort of SQL or other database that you might have in your environment. So I'm going to close that because I don't want to actually manage it, and take a look at some of the interactive functionality here inside of the dashboard. So one of the nice things is that I can just click on different parts of the graph and have it actually update. So notice that I clicked on audio, and then it actually updated which brands were selling the audio areas, and it updated, changed the map to what was being updated. Now I'm going to click on cameras and camcorders, and there, now you can see how that updated the red bars to show me which brands were doing well in that angle, or for cameras and camcorders. Now, it also allows us to map out some of that information over time. So I'm going to pop out the timeline view here, and I want to, again, select the cameras and camcorders, and I want to see how this is doing over a different period of time. And so now it's actually showing me all of the different sales throughout the year and how those were doing. And so it's a nice way to see, oh, okay, this, you know, and I can go back to a certain time and see, okay, interesting, you know, in July, all of our sales were really down. But again, as we got closer to the holiday season, sales picked up for different areas. And you can analyze, oh, I wonder why Fabricam did so well and what went really well with it. So again, it's just another way of letting people find the insights inside their data that they have. And provide interesting dashboards. And of course, this is this works. It's powered by Silverlight. So on in a browser, in a web app, you can actually then embed these dashboards inside SharePoint. And people don't even have to open up the Excel sheet, but can actually just manipulate it all right from within a web app view in their browser. So it creates nice dashboards from that standpoint. So we'll go ahead and close that. No, we don't want to save any of those features, any of those changes. So we're back to our SharePoint site. And we'll go and check out the news feed view. So here we've got the news feed. This is new with SharePoint 2013. And this allows us to follow people, documents, sites. My favorite is documents. This is the one I use the most because, when people are constantly working on a bunch of different content, it's nice to be able to know when their updates have been posted to those documents that you're relying on or you're waiting on. So that's one of my favorites. But you can see here how it provides a nice timeline view. We'll just see here so you can see the documents that we're following. There we are. And there, for example, is the one that I just added before I went in and did the changes in that Excel sheet. So again, you can just see which ones and stop and change which ones you care about. Also notice there were suggested ones, other documents that might be related or that other people, if they were following the same set of documents you are, it can suggest, hey, I think you probably want to follow this document too. Here you can see going back into the news feed, you can see some of the conversations that are going on here with people being able to do things like replying with links to other videos, replying with links to their documents, and be able to preview those inside the web app. We can, of course, like the posts, and things are integrated, such as, you can get someone's contact details, you can go and click on that person, and go to their profile, and learn more about them and how they interact and fit into your organization. So it's all nicely integrated into the sort of news feed view for you to navigate it. And we'll go back to Katie Jordan's. So we can see again just all of those points of interaction there. And also, you saw, again, this is where you get to things like your About Me, where you can update your profile page, some of the apps that you might have, so apps that you've picked. Like I showed those ones in Outlook, if you've added apps into Excel or Word, for example, you can manage your apps or apps that you've purchased for SharePoint here. And then I showed the tasks earlier, but again, just that being able to aggregate all of your tasks from your different sites into a single view. So your newsfeed really is a place you can go and get all of the different tasks and projects that you're working on and have all that information coming to you, so you don't have to go to different places and hunt for that information. Basically, it will provide you what you need to make sure you're working on your next set of tasks and getting things done there. Another important aspect of the Office 365 experience here is the SkyDrive Pro. So there's SkyDrive, and SkyDrive without Pro is the version that is on your Microsoft account. So it sits in our public cloud, and it's available to consumers. Then there's SkyDrive Pro, and this is the version that's included in SharePoint and the version that comes in SharePoint Online inside of Office 365. So just sometimes there's confusion about that, but it's just the Pro is the version inside of SharePoint built on that with all of the compliance and manageability in the back end. SkyDrive by itself is the consumer version available as part of people's Microsoft accounts. Now a nice functionality with SkyDrive is the ability to, of course, sync your documents, and so this allows you to have those get cached locally on your machine. So that if you go offline, you have those SkyDrive documents actually synced, and then if you make changes while you're offline, you're able to have just the differences synced. So it's very network bandwidth friendly because of the investments we made in OpenXML in 2007, it can see the differences in the file and of course sync just those back up to the server. You can also, while we can sync our primary SkyDrive, our main personal document library, you can also sync SharePoint sites that you also are very important to you. So that Northwind Traders one that I've been using over and over again, that might be one that Katie would also sync down to her machine. And when you sync them down to your machine, you can see how they appear over on inside of Windows 8 or Windows 7. You can see how they appear just in your favorites section. So here I've got SkyDrive, that's my consumer space, and then I've got SkyDrive at Microsoft, so that's my work one that I have connected to my Microsoft account. So, excuse me, not my Microsoft account, my work account. So that's my SkyDrive Pro, if you will. And so this is where you can have, and again, if you had multiple ones, they would just show up as like SkyDrive at Northwind Traders site. And so you can have lots of these different ones all synced and cached locally on your machine, giving you offline access when you need it. So that's a nice point of integration. Another interesting little button up here at the top is the focus on content. It actually hides all the UI and lets you then focus on whatever's in the middle. Very useful if you have a lot of BI dashboards, for example. So let's see. Let's go over to take a look at this PowerPoint document here. We'll pull up this preview. So here we're opening up this document inside of the PowerPoint web app. All of the web apps have been updated with the 2013 release. And we've done a lot of improvements to make sure that they work better across devices, in particular, better JavaScript object support in the Safari mobile browser. So that means that people will be able to actually edit using the web apps on iOS devices, which has been a very common request by our users. So that's one of the improvements there. For the web apps, let's just try a different document here. Let's see. Load that again. Well, I'll let that load. While that's loading, I'm going to go ahead and show a couple other features inside of the PowerPoint rich client here. One that I find really useful, I took a slide that I had in my presentation earlier because I use this in real life, and I just think those are great examples. I love some of the new grid line features inside PowerPoint. So it makes everyone able to make beautiful looking PowerPoints. You can see how this is updating, and it's providing me information about how far apart all of these boxes are. So when I get it perfectly, when I get it really well aligned, it shows the equal distance between all of these different areas. So you can see down here all of the equal distance between the different boxes. So a lot of advanced new grid lines that, again, just-in-time UI information, right? We don't have to show those grid lines and show those information to the user all the entire time they're working on the slide, just when they're trying to align these different aspects, you know, these different objects inside of the PowerPoint. So that's a really, really useful new feature. There's also some new interesting presenter view modes. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to extend my desktop here so that you can see this properly. I did not like that. Okay, maybe we won't. We'll go back to duplicate. All right, we'll have to fake it. So when I go into presenter view mode, and now if I go ahead and I want to show you the new presenter view. So if I go ahead and I want to swap displays, there we go. So now you can see I'm actually seeing the slide as if I was you. And you're now seeing my view in the new presenter mode. And so there's new options here that that enable us to do things like quickly, if, you know, how often have you been giving a presentation and you want to jump to some other random slide way down at the bottom, right? And now you can do this without your audience having any idea that you're doing it. And so it looks like you just magically built your deck to go in exactly the order that they were anticipating. So it's very useful from a presenter standpoint. Another useful one, of course, is you can zoom into your slides. So if you have certain areas, so now the audience is seeing just what's inside that square. So you can zoom into different aspects of your presentation. There's also the ability to mark up your presentation. You can highlight, so you can actually draw on it, or you can just do like a laser pointer, and then people just see the red line on your document. So now I'm going to go up, and then of course, what I did to quickly switch this, because so often you know you have to monkey around with the different which presenter view mode do I want to be in? We've added this handy little button right at the top, so you can quickly swap between the two different views in case it doesn't get set up quite the way you expected it to. So again, just making it faster for people to feel confident in delivering their presentations and giving you more tools as the presenter to manipulate that. So those are some of the new features there inside of PowerPoint. Now, just going back to our web app here, just wanted to show going into we're going to edit it inside of the web app. Another piece of functionality that we've added in the web apps is for more commenting. So commenting works a lot better for document reviewing inside of the web apps as well. So here you can see the new view. And what I want to point out is we added things like animations and added more transitions. So we're adding more and more of the rich client features into the web apps. It's still not, you know, there's still not parity, and there will never be every single feature. Certain things like mail merge just don't make sense in the web apps. But we're making sure to continue to add the most demanded features into the web apps and continuing to improve and invest in them as we see them being a very, very important part of our story in Office 365 and our services in general. So we continue to invest in those areas. So we can see, again, just some of the new buttons. And even inside of insert, we've just added more options, more things that you can insert. Of course, being able to insert pictures from the web is integrated. And commenting, like I said, we've enhanced the editing and reviewing process for all of the web apps. There's also more commenting and one of the highly demanded features, track changes inside of the Word web app. So again, making the web apps better at doing certain scenarios is really our focus. And then go ahead and close out of this. And then the last thing just wanted to comment on is Link. This is the new Link 2013. And you can just see, again, you have your context. It looks fairly similar to the other one, just with the new look and design to it. And then when you click on someone, you're then given the options of how you want to communicate with them, whether you want to start an IM conversation, if you want to call them, start a video chat, for example, or see their contact card. And then also, there's also the Link app for Windows 8. And so you can see that same experience here. If you had meetings, your meetings show up, link meetings, and you can just do one-click join. You have your contacts, like you saw in the other view, although it's not, oh, there they are. They're loading. And then you can go back again if you have voicemail, history, messages. We can just go back to the main view. So this is one of our new Windows 8 apps, and you can imagine we're continuing to invest and make other Windows 8 app experiences as well. But this was first one, wanted to show you that one. And then I want to jump over, so I've been mostly showing you from kind of an end user experience. There's a nice new getting started experience for your users. So when users jump into Office 365 for the first time and you set up their new account, they get this experience, which gives them some walkthroughs of what's new in the Office web apps, how to think about OWA. They can quickly get to videos or read some documentation. If they want to get Office installed, it gives them the ability to self-install. Yes, you can turn this off if you're going to do a full managed deployment, but the options here if you want to let people install. And again, the new version of Office, because it uses click-to-run virtualization technology, you can install it side-by-side with a previous version. You don't have to uninstall the other version. So if you have 2007 on your desktops, you can still install the new 2013 version and let your users get working and using the new features. While they can still maybe you have an add-in that hasn't been updated for 2013, they can still go back to the 2007 version and use that add-in in their organization. So it makes it much faster for you to get these applications deployed and used inside of your organization. And then also it's got some setup tips for people configuring their different phone devices. Also has a nice little JavaScript walkthrough of, hey, this is what the nav bar does, this is how you should think about it. So again, just we're trying to build more help and how-to into the product in a non-intrusive way to help get people up and started using the service right when they log on. So now I'll jump over to just quickly show you an admin view. So here I've logged in as the admin for this portal. And so now we've kind of gone through all of the end user aspects. I want to show you just quickly what the admin experience is. This is your dashboard that gives you some of the most common tasks or quick information, such as current health, letting you know if there have been any service interruptions, any degradation in performance in your service. We also give you, hey, if there's planned maintenance coming for your service, anything that might impact your tenant. When I use the word tenant, that just means everything that's inside of in your Office 365 account for your organization is one tenant. And so any impacts to your tenant appear there. You can also open service requests right from in here. If there's certain things where you're having issues or you need help from support, you can actually open those service tickets right from this dashboard and track open ones. And we also provide you with a few reports as well. Here it's just showing inactive mailboxes, but there's more reports over on the side. So from within the admin dashboard, you can do things like manage your users and groups. Let me go back to users and groups here. Here you can see all of the different users, things like the conference rooms, et cetera. And you can see their status if they're in the cloud, or if you've set up directory synchronization, it will let you know you can't manage them here. You need to manage them through your on-prem Active Directory. So that's how you can know how that's set up. Also gives you setup and directions for setting up things like single sign-on and changing your password policy all from this area. So very useful. And you can also control other admins' access to the Office 365 services through this portal as well. You have your domains where you can set up all of your company and business domains that you want to have. You've got your licensing information, which licenses you have available. We have service settings, so this allows you to change some of the settings. Some of the settings are from the deeper workloads, so notice that you can still get to the Exchange, Link, and SharePoint administration centers from within this view, all from the same navigation element. But we've also integrated some of those settings into the service settings area. Here you can see, for example, this is where you can disable the ability for your users to just download Office 365. As I mentioned, some organizations want to make sure that people can't do this because you want to do a managed deployment through, say, System Center or something like that. You also have your service health dashboard. This is where you can get more a much more detailed and precise view about how the service is doing, and you can drill into any of the workloads and see the different parts of it and how it's running. And we also have provided, we've updated the information bar to give you more detailed information about what's going on with your service. We used to only have 5 different indicators. We now have 10 indicators total, so we've doubled the number of indicators to give you more precise information. And if there is any sort of service interruption, you're able to, these become links into a more detailed incident report that you're able to drill down into. Where you can get that. And also, there's an RSS feed, so you can subscribe to this and get push notifications if you need to, if you're, you know, want to make sure you know of any change whatsoever to your service in that sense. There's the reporting functionality. Now, my reports are pretty bare since I haven't signed up for any spam aliases or anything. But basically, you've got a lot of Exchange data that's been exposed here, and as well as some of the Exchange Online Protection, or what used to be called Forefront Online Protection. So a lot of those reports here, you've got, for example, your DLP. So if I had sent that email earlier, remember, with the credit card data, you would actually get some of the DLP data would show that, oh, you tried to send a message and we flagged it. I didn't actually send it, but that would be where that kind of data would show up in your reports. So there's a lot of good information that we provide here. And there's also, this is where you get your, there's a support section. Now, this is pretty bare right now because this is preview tenants and we don't actually want support coming through our preview ones. But there'll be the option for the phone number, there'll be a chat agent, and the ability to create service requests right from within the support portal. So you can do it all through this portal. Now, that's just a quick admin overview. So with that, I'm going to jump back over to the slides. So now we'll move into some more of the trust aspects of the service and talk a little bit about some of our privacy, security, compliance areas. We'll take a look at, so first just want to let you know about our data centers. We, Office 365, we break our data centers into 3 geographic regions of data isolation. One of those is the Americas, one is Europe and Africa, and then the third is the APAC region. And basically, data within those regions stays within them. And we also have been investing heavily in our data centers around the world for a long time. And 365 has just accelerated a lot of those investments that you can see here. I also like to point out the focused on last mile excellence. What that really means is we have our main data centers where your data is stored. We also have CDNs in thousands of locations all over the world that have all of the server code, so the code that runs things like the OWA web app and the SharePoint sites that you just saw, not the data, but the code that runs the web application. That is sitting closer so that it executes faster for your end users. So that's what we mean by last mile excellence, so that we're really making sure that there's a very snappy feel to our web experience no matter where you are in the world. Another area I talked about earlier was continuous innovation. And so don't try and read anything into this. There's no announcements here. This is just giving you an idea of how we think about our updates as we continue to innovate on top of the service. And so, you know, we launched Office 365 about 18 months ago, and we have our big first update to that service coming out sometime next year, roughly. And so that basically is one of the larger updates. But at the same time, we're also doing quarterly updates, and we've continuously been delivering different features into the service that people are requesting. And so I gave kind of an example of some of the quarterly updates. And you can go to our Office 365 service update wiki and see all of the past updates since we launched back in 2011. But things like being able to have preview in the web apps, we've added the PDF support inside of SharePoint, and also, we're constantly adding new countries, new languages, and markets to the service as well as we continue to expand our global availability. So those are just some of the examples there. And just so you're aware of how we're trying to basically update the service faster, because we have that controlled environment where we know exactly which versions of the server code, that allows us to be more agile and push out updates faster. So what are some of the core areas around running a trusted service? One of those, of course, is around privacy. We are very, very, we always believe that your data is yours. Microsoft does not claim to own your data. Even though we're storing it for you, it always remains the customer's. And we never want to invade your privacy in unknown ways. And so we try to be very transparent about how we use your data, if it's used for anything. We also get independently verified as a service, and I'll talk about some of those certifications. And then, of course, we're relentless on security, and we have a long history at Microsoft around our trustworthy computing initiatives and what we do at all layers, starting with just from the very beginning in software development and the principles that all of the engineers go through to make sure that their software is architected securely, to all of the things we actually do on top of that in for the service specifically. So I'll dive into some of these. So around privacy, one of the important areas here really is the fact that we do not mine your data for any form of advertising. Your data is yours again. We don't go through it. There's no scanning of your data for these purposes. Another aspect is data portability. You can always take your data out of our service at any point in time, and it always belongs to you. And we don't mingle. So that means that basically we have a separation of data, physical separation between our consumer services, so the Microsoft account, and like I mentioned earlier, things like SkyDrive are separated physically from our 365 offering, such as SkyDrive Pro. And so we have no mingling, so that organizational data is kept separate from any of the consumer data. Also provides, you know, there's also some layers of security protection that provides as well. Transparency. So we will provide you with data maps of where your data is stored, and we also let you know where your data is stored based on your ship-to address when you create your account. Like I mentioned, we have three major regions, and then you can get more online. We have more detailed data flow maps if you want to see how we can move the data within a region. If for some reason we have to change the data center in which your data is located, you are notified as an admin. And the only reason we would access your customer core data is because for anti-spam and protection, or because of a service request that you have requested. And any time that happens, there's also, it's audited, and you can get a report on that of who inside Microsoft had access to the data, what they accessed, and why it was accessed. And it's basically always because, on an exception basis, because of a customer request. Like, you're trying to, there's some sort of reason that we have to access it on your behalf. So around compliance, there have been a lot of additions in the compliance area. Just calling out some interesting ones. There's ISO 27001. This is really around our operations and procedures of how we run the service and making sure this is an international standard that we adhere to. We also have EU model clauses, an EU safe harbor, and a data processing agreement. All three of these combined really set the highest bar for how data is moved inside of our service, so that it always is in areas that you want it to be. And this is, again, to protect against certain regulations of data flowing in and out of certain countries. The other one that was added recently was HIPAA, and we will sign. So HIPAA for the U.S. is very, very important when you're working with medical companies, and we will sign a BAA with any customer. You can go and download that from our website. Where we again will guarantee that we're compliant with the HIPAA. And then also we have a FISMA certification for some of our data centers as well. From a security standpoint, we really take a multi-layered approach to our security. So it starts with the Office 365 facilities, our data center facilities themselves, from all of the physical perimeters that we have around there, physical access controls to who is able to access the data, are able to access the physical servers. And then, of course, there's all of the layers of abstraction between the network. For example, all of the network communications are using SSL and TLS, just like you would with your online banking, for example. In addition to that, you've got some of the secure engineering practices that I mentioned earlier from our trustworthy computing initiative. So those are very important from that aspect. And then, of course, at a user and data level, we give you, the customer, the ability to control at a very granular level what sort of access and privileges your users have. For example, in the new Office 365 update, you have the ability to turn on rights management service and have it hosted by us. So if you want to make sure that emails are IRM'd, or if you want to make sure that certain documents, even if they do somehow get outside of your organization, without an account to access that against your RMS server, they're not going to be able to open those documents. So there's multiple multiple levels for your security. So I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the IT aspects quickly around IDs. I mentioned this when I was showing you the admin portal, but some considerations when you're thinking about how to set up Office 365 in your organization are, where do you want your identities to be stored? So you can have identities stored in the cloud, completely managed there. You can manage it either through the portal, or you could use something like PowerShell. You can also use directory synchronization, where you actually have an on-prem server that syncs up your Active Directory, and you're managing it on-premise still, and then it just makes the sync to Office 365, and you're then just enabling that. And then the last and more advanced option is really around having federation. And so this is where, if you want to have a single sign-on and have it be a seamless experience integrated in your environment, you can integrate with different federation. ADFS is the most widely supported one, but this gives you options for, again, having a single secure identity with Office 365. And it also means that you're managing, if you go with federation, it means obviously that you're managing the passwords and just using secure tokens for passing access between. And so there's been some updates to who we can work with for federation, so I wanted to call that out because we've been actively adding a lot of additional partners in this area from where we were a year ago. So obviously ADFS was what we started with, was our main supported option, and obviously it's, you know, we can closely integrate and partner with the teams that develop ADFS. But we've also wanted to make sure that we could work with some non-AD options as well. And so we have some works with 365 partners, such as Ping, that we're working with to enable more federation. We're also working closely with IBM and Oracle, Novell, and a few others to take their WS Star implementations of federation as well. So if you're interested in any of those, please contact your Microsoft representative, and we can make sure that you get access to some of the documentation that we're working on for creating those types of integration. And then finally, for education customers, we also offer Shibboleth integration, but it does have a few limitations, mainly that it can't be used with the rich clients at all. It's only for your web clients, and that's kind of the main sticking point there, but it can be appropriate for education institutions where they weren't using the Office client aspects anyways. And it works, since that's such a prevalent federation service there, we wanted to make sure we supported that in the education space. Hybrid, I mentioned this briefly, but basically there have been some new additions to Hybrid. We've extended the Exchange coexistence story and enhanced that. We've also made sure that now there's a Hybrid support through split domain for Link, and SharePoint can now have federated search. So you can have sites on SharePoint Online and SharePoint On-Premise, and you can actually have search crawl both of those at the same time, so your users don't even know that you're actually running different workloads on from different places. So basically allows for better integration within your organization. And also, I like calling out that Exchange, as I mentioned earlier, you can actually have it so seamless that you're managing your users from the same portal, and it doesn't matter whether the user's on-prem or online. It's all happening from within the same view. Support, I mentioned this earlier, just have the 24 telephone support, and I've just got some screenshots because, again, I didn't have that. It wasn't working in the preview tenant yet because we haven't pushed that code out. But I wanted to just show you, so you can have the interactive chat window. You can also make sure that you can set up your service updates. You can also, here's how you create a service request, and it has identify what the issue is, and you can set all these different variables so that it's routed quickly. And then, of course, for telephone support for any immediate urgent needs that you have, it gives you the link for the telephone number right there. And then last, I'm going to finish up. Just quickly wanted to talk about some of the different versions of Office 365 that are out there. So we have Office 365 for small businesses. It currently in market, you might see that referred to as the Professional Plan, or P1. So that will continue to exist. It'll be renamed the Small Business. And there will also be Small Business Premium, which will include the Office Client. So again, this is ideal for your small organizations. It's the best way for them to get Office 365. It's got a different admin experience than what I showed you today. It's been much more simplified, and things like Exchange and SharePoint are actually sort of hidden from the user because these customers often don't have advanced IT shops that understand the differences between them, and they don't need that much detail. Then we'll have a mid-size offering for businesses, as you can see, about the size we will let that one be used for. It does have a maximum, both the small business and the mid-size have a maximum seat count, so you can't have organizations of a certain size use them. But the mid-sized business will be a more fully featured with some advanced IT controls. It'll have a similar UI to what I showed in the admin center today. And you get all of that functionality, but again, it's just aimed at smaller organizations. And then the bread and butter of Office 365, of what I've been going through, is really around the enterprise offerings. But we have enterprise offerings, we have education, which are mirror images. They're just priced differently to meet education needs. And then we have a government version for here in the United States. We have a special government community cloud that's available only in the U.S., and it's a completely isolated data center just for government organizations. Again, it mirrors the features and functionality of the enterprise suite. It's just an isolated data center to meet the FISMA and some other requirements for our government customers. So those are some of the options available. And of course, these ones scale to very, very large. I put 500,000 plus. Any organization of that size, you'll be in dialogues with us anyways, making sure that we've got technical fit for you. So thank you very much for coming to Office 365 overview session. I hope I was able to give you a nice overview of all the new features.